Okay, so finally we can start. And remember that last time we finished in the middle of nowhere, we had this notion of complete lattice. We discussed the notion of monotone endomorphism or endofunction on it. And we introduced this notion of set of prefix points. Have I already started doing this, or this is new material actually? Actually, no, this is a new slide. So let's go slower. Now, in order to explain when and how those fixed points that we want to exist really exist, I'm proposing two sets for any monotone function on our lattice. First, the set of prefix points. That is simply the set of all elements such that f of s is below s. And then we have the set of post-fixed points, the set of all elements such that s is below f of s. So this is the set of elements on which our f is deflationary. This would be another name. And this is the set of elements on which our f is behaves like inflationary function. You remember this example last week when I showed you that even monotone function on a lattice which has top and bottom does not have to have a fixed point, right? This is so-called Chang's chain, by the way. So, in this particular case, the pre-F would be this guy. This is the set of all elements where F goes below its input. And this is the set of all elements on which F goes above its input. So, this wasn't a complete lattice. So we couldn't take, for example, supremum of all postfix points or infimum of all prefix points. But if you have a complete lattice, this is precisely what you need. In order to find the least fixed point of F, so first of all, we know that in a complete lattice, a fixed point of every monotone mapping would exist. Again, just to make sure that we don't forget what fixed point was, it was, I should not call it S, I should call it C, because S would be our state space. This is what fixed point was. And our claim is that not only we know that some fixed point must exist on complete lattices, but we can even point out some very specific ones, in particular the smallest, the least of them, and the greatest of them. And we just use those sets of prefix points and postfix points as in order to compute it. So the least fixed point of a given function is obtained as the infimum of pre-f. And the greatest fixed point is obtained as supremum of post-f. You see that here there are no such people. And, of course, if fixed point exists, so if we have non-empty set of elements fix f, which is set of those c such that fc is equal to c, then fixed points of our function are a special case of pre-fixed points and at the same time there are special cases of post-fixed points, right? So already in the very statement of this theorem we have that this is a good we see immediately that this is a good candidate for a least fixed point because it's the smallest element of an even bigger set than the set of all fixed points. The set of all fixed points is contained in the set of prefixed points. Similarly, the greatest fixed point is a special case of post-fixed point. So if only we can show that the supremum of the set of post-fixed points is a particular case of a fixed point, it automatically must be the greatest one. So our first approximation of the proof is, or first observation is that it would be enough to show that let's focus on the first clause. Supremum infimum or the mid of the set of all prefix point is an element of fix F. In order to show it is least but, as I'm saying here on this slide, in fact, we need to show even less to show the first bullet point, and the second bullet point will be exactly analogous to that, to the second. We don't even know to show that this thing belongs here to fix F. It's enough to show that it belongs here. And it is here to belong to this set. It's a bigger one. As I said, it is a bigger, so it's easier. Why? Why this seemingly more general or more trivial statement would do? Why, if this infimum is here, it must be already here. Even though this set, in general, may be bigger than this set. Because if our function on this argument is below free f, the infimum of free f itself, but properly, what I mean by this is that maybe let's make it clear that A strictly below B, which is sometimes also written in this way. Maybe let's introduce both notation. Denotes that A is below B and A is not below B. So if this thing holds, what would also be the case is that f of 3f is an element of 3f strictly smaller than infimum of this set. And this contradicts the definition of infimum. Why? Why this would imply that we have this? Maybe let's clarify this. If f p 3 infimum of 3f is below infimum of 3f itself, then by monotonicity, you see what is happening here, right? I can write this f in front of both sides of this inequality. Sorry. Then by monotonicity, we have that f of f 3f is contained in f of p, of, sorry, this is not p, this is infimum of p, which means that this guy satisfies the defining condition of the set of prefix points. I hope it is clear now why this condition would imply that we have this, But at the same time, this would mean that we have an element of the set of prefix points, which is strictly below infimum of the set of prefix points. And this is, if you recall the definition of infimum, it contradicts directly what infimum should be. Alles klar soweit oder nicht? Is there any point where you get lost, apart from my handwriting? Or especially if it's my handwriting?
When you want to define that strictly below A and B, on the end you meant B is not strictly below A.
What?
You said that the enumeration means that A, yeah, it means that A is below B, and then you said it's not below B. And I think
What I'm saying here is that A is not equal to B.
Equal.
Okay. Yeah, this is what I'm saying, especially with my handwriting. Okay, so we know now that we have much less work to do. We just need to show this. This condition stated here on the slide. And this is perhaps the simplest part of the proof. So to show star that is that f of pi of infimum or mid of pre f is indeed below infimum of pre f. Note that for every c in pre f, we have that the infimum of pre f is below c. Now, by monotonicity, we also have that f of infimum is below our f of c. And by definition of the prefix point, we get this. By definition of the so this holds for every c in the set of prefix points. As for every c in pre f, we have that f of infimum of pre f is below c. By definition of infimum, I'm gradually making this infimum looking like this rather than a square style, because it's less confusing than making it looking like pi, I think. we have that f of pi pre f is below infimum of pre f, and we are done. This is exactly what we wanted to show. And the proof that you can compute greatest fixed point as supremum of post fixed points is exactly analogous. So here, this is precisely what is missing. If we were creating canonical, what is known as the Dedekind magnetic completion of this lattice, we would just add, or actually canonical completion as well. You would add one or two points, depends what properties you want to have in this complete lattice, which would be supremum of this guy or infimum of this guy, or could even collapse these two things. And then, obviously, if this f is supposed to be monotone, it will have no choice but to loop on at least one or possibly two of these guys, depending how you extend it. But we don't have those things here. But nice mathematically as it is, and actually, the original Kleist-Cerdasky is more general. What it says is that you have a whole complete lattice of fixed points. Now we obtain just smallest and greatest elements of the set of fixed points. But we don't need it here. And to be honest, maybe it was even a bit of overkill given how much time it took us. So as long as you don't have to bother with even simple infinite structures, but simpler finite ones, but on the other hand, you want to have something useful, some algorithm or some computable method of achieving those fixed points, this formula does not look very good for efficient model checking. And you need to check first for every possible subset of your domain, of your Carrier set, of your model, if your formula treated now as endo function of subsets does not make it smaller, and then compute, check which one of the subsets is smallest again, so you are making things unnecessarily complicated. In the finite case, it is possible to compute those fixed points much more efficiently. And, well, actually I should have done blackboard. I should have put it on slide, not just on blackboard, but this is all that we will need as long as we want to compute fixed points of functions and power sets of finite transition systems. So here we could not find this fixed point in finitely many iterations, but let us think of a slightly different strategy. If you have a finite lattice is always complete, has always smallest and greatest element. In a finite lattice, you have all the bounds, in particular, bottom and top. That was infimum of the empty set or supremum of the whole lattice. This was supremum of the empty set or infimum of the whole lattice. This was infimum of the empty set or supremum of the whole lattice. So, because of monotonicity, monotonicity yields that this thing, the bottom, of course must be below f bottom. Well, actually, this is not even monotonicity, sorry. Definition of bottom, in fact, yields that this must be always true, right? Bottom is the smallest element. Now, by monotonicity, here is where you use monotonicity. And transitivity of partial ordering. Give you that this must be below f of bottom. So you apply f on both sides of this inequality, sorry. And this must be in turn below f applied three times on bottom. So very special postfix points we have here. Now, if you have only finitely many elements, this thing cannot go forever, right? I mean, you cannot, even if this thing is strictly below this one, and this thing is strictly below this one, and this thing is strictly below this one, at some point you simply run out of elements to go up. So, it's a bit funny, because I told you that the way to compute smallest fixed point is to compute it as infimum of all prefix points. But now I'm suggesting clearly that maybe you can compute, in fact, smallest fixed point as a supremum of some very, very special subset of post-fixed points in a finite lattice, at least. Is it clear what I'm talking about? Maybe I can erase it now. Or maybe it's a bit too early, but anyway. And now that I think about it, maybe this is all that I needed to tell you about fixed points. If we are only concerned with finite ones, then assuming that we will not need fixed point theory later in semantics of programming, and I'm not still sure how much we will need, and we are not going to consider here model checking of infinite structures like natural numbers or reals, this simple procedure that I'm describing right now is all that you need to know about them. If lattice has only finitely many elements, at some point this chain must stabilize. And this would be the least fixed point. Notice we now computed it as is the supremum of a very special, very narrow subset of post-fixed points. So completely different, on the surface at least, completely differently than in the proof that I described on the previous slide. Dually, in order to compute the greatest fixed point, start from top of course, because of definition of top, f of top must be below top, and then applying monotonicity to both sides of this inequality, you get again f square top, and at some point you stabilize. So again you computed greatest fixed point as an infimum of a very special set of prefix points. But of course, this only works in a finite structure, unless this F behaves nicely with respect to infima and suprema somehow. Right, so this is the point that I was making before. We approach least fixed point using special subset of post-fixed point, and we approach greatest fixed point using special subset of prefix point. You couldn't generalize it also to infinite case, but that would require theory of ordinal, transmit induction. I don't know if anybody here has seen any set theory. Is it? No, right, so forget about it. We don't do it here. But even if we just have natural numbers and nothing more at our disposal, if our function behaves nicely with respect to, for example, suprema of countable chains or infima of countable chains, this procedure can be also applied, and then we don't even need completeness. We only need the assumption that those suprema of countable chain exist. This is so-called Clini fixed point theorem, which is useful in the notational semantics of recursive programs, but we don't need it. Okay, sorry. This was probably overlong general background on fixed points, and now I wanted to. We need to return to model checking algorithms per se, and I want to illustrate why, in fact, I believe that thinking in terms of those fixed points and their general properties allows you to present model checking algorithms in a very straightforward way. So recall that our goal is computing the notations of state or path formulas, or state formulas. And there were some obvious endofunctions on power set, which is a lattice, even finite lattice, that we need in this computation. In particular, the pre-image of A with respect to the transition relation, and its universally quantified or box-like counterpart. You remember what those functions were doing, right? You were given any subset of elements of the state space. You were calculating all the states. You were checking all the states which have at least one successor in A, in this case. Or in this case, you look at all exactly those subsets of the state space whose all successors belong to I. This defines some way of transforming sets into subsets of the space, subsets of the state space into other subsets, and the function of our lattice. Is it monotone in both of these cases? So, the bigger it should be, that the bigger this A is, the bigger also this whole thing is, and the bigger this whole thing is. Is it clear that this is true? So, bigger set has more predecessor, and smaller set has less predecessor, right? It's a trivial observation. And you remember that we had all those equivalences for path quantifiers and modalities. By the way, what I call modalities is those F, at some point in future, G, everywhere in future, U, until, and X at the next state. So this were things that we wrote as formulas, but now we can write them as in terms of sets. And if you think of this denotation of a formula as just some indefinite unknown set X or A that we want to know, you notice that we have an equation defining it in terms of this monotone function, where the thing that you want to define occurs both on the left and on the right side of the equation. It's maybe not quite definition yet, but what we're saying here is that all those sets are supposed to be fixed points on or of suitable functions on the state space. Is it clear? Because this is the crucial point. And 1 week or 2 weeks ago, I was already trying to illustrate that depending on the syntactic shape of our formula, in some cases you want to look maybe at smallest fixed points, and in some cases you want to look at greatest fixed points, because we have already seen that in general such equations will have more than one solution. We need to know which one we are looking for. So those exercises that we did, together with this finitary method of computing that I just sketched on the blackboard, already indicated clearly that if the leading connective is conjunction or set theoretical intersection, if you go back, you see that we have it here and here. Then this thing will not do a fat lot of good, right? If you have, okay, well, this is a bit too simplistic, I admit. So moreover, we also know that one of the things that we intersect with is obtained at the set of all predecessors or the image of the input formula. And we know that we are on non-terminating transition structures, that ones that never get stuck. So if you start with an empty set here, in this method of computing fixed points. This also has to be empty. It can be non-empty only if you have stuck points, points which cannot make any transition anymore. Then this operator AX of empty set is a non-empty set, but it cannot happen. In our case, it always is always empty. So already in the first step, where you begin with the smallest element of the power set lattice, which is empty subset, you are making intersection with empty subset when you're passing from here to here. Our F here is this guy. So then it means that you never leave the empty set. This is, so empty set indeed is a possible solution of this equation, where both my hands are one and the same x, or one and the same a. But it's a very trivial, completely useless solution. That's not what we have in mind. This is a bit kind of wavy argument, but of course you need to show it in a bit more detail that what you're looking at here is greatest fixed point of this function. But this is what I want to convince you of. So in order to compute these two guys, you're doing this. You start from the top. And then you take the denotation of phi itself, and you take the intersection with ax of top, of the set of all points. What does it mean? It means that you throw away all the points where phi does not hold. Right? This is the first step. So already in the first step, when computing ag or eg, you narrow down to the notation of phi. Then, in the next step, when passing from here to here, you are throwing away more points because you're making another intersection. You are keeping those points which not only satisfy phi, but all of their successors satisfy one step successor, next step successor, satisfy phi as well. Then when you make this step, that is not even here anymore, you keep only those points which not only satisfy phi, but also all their successors satisfy phi, and the successor of their successor satisfy phi. And because you are on the finite structure, at some point you run out of things to throw out from this set. So at some point this procedure must stabilize. This is how you will compute this denotation of those things. For all the other ones, we have the opposite situation. Again, this is hand-wavy argument. We will need to show in a bit more detail that, for example, here we are really looking at greatest fixed point, and here we are looking at smallest fixed point. But if you want to have first approximation why this must be smallest and not any other fixed point, in particular why greatest fixed point here is trivial, if you start with this thing here, if you replace it by whole recursion variable, and the first thing that you input would be top, then ax of top, again, because we are on non-terminating transition system, will be, again, top itself. And then if you add things to top, you will not obtain anything interesting. You will still stay at the set of all formulas. So greatest fixed point, indeed, of course, exists for this function, but it is not interesting. And while we still need to show this formally, what we are looking here at here, 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 and here, is the smallest fixed point. So we start with the set, with the empty set. AX of empty set is again empty, so nothing happens here. And then you add the denotation of phi in these two cases, or the denotation of psi in this case. This is how we begin this computation. So we know, and now you are not throwing things away, you keep adding it. You keep adding elements to what in the end should turn out to be the notation of AF, EF, on all paths until, on some path until. So in the next step, you will add, in this case, apart from all those points that you have already which satisfy phi, you will add those points which did not satisfy phi necessarily, but at least one of their successors here, or all of their successors here, satisfied phi. And then, so this is, we have already moved here. And then when moving here, you add all points which maybe themselves do not satisfy phi, and maybe even not all of their successors, or maybe none of their successors satisfies phi. But then successor of the, at least one successor of the successor satisfies phi, or all successors of the successor satisfy phi. And at some point, you run out of things to add. This is slightly the computation of the notation of until with path quantifier is slightly looking slightly more complicated, but the idea is again the same. You begin with those points where psi already holds, so you don't have to wait. You are saying here that on all paths, phi holds until psi, but psi holds here already. There is nothing more to be done. Or at least one path, phi until psi holds, but psi holds here. So this is a good starting point. This is what you have when you move here. Because for empty set, this part is trivial. And then you add the set of those points where phi holds, and all of their successors are already here, which, when moving from here to here, meant simply all of their successors satisfy psi, or at least one of the successors satisfy psi. And if you iterate it in finitely many steps, because we are living in a finite world, at some point you will don't have to add things anymore. Is the idea clear? Kind of, sort of. Is it clear now why I was talking so much about this connection with fixed points? For whom is it completely unclear? Okay, so, well, don't see too many people nodding in enthusiasm. At least I can hope that nobody is completely lost. And maybe if we spend a bit more time, things will begin to clear up. Right. Aha, I said exercise verify. So maybe this is a bit too much to leave as exercise, especially that you're doing completely different things at tutorials anyway. Well, completely, I mean, you're working with concretely compute fixed points. But so maybe let's say that, maybe let's start with the first one. Let's try to convince ourselves that the fixed points that we're looking for here should be really the greatest one. That it's not a coincidence, because I told you there may be many more fixed points contained properly between least and greatest. So the fact that least does not do the job does not mean that it has to be greatest, that is the right one. So we want to show that the notation of AG phi, I'm going to drop this M everywhere because it's just a hassle for me and for you to write, is the greatest solution to the fixed point equation x, let's even write explicitly x with superscript max equals I intersected with ax. These are different, very different x's. It may be confusing. Maybe let me write. Whatever. You are not going to be confused by this. So, in order to show this, so we know already that this is this, because this validity, this equivalence is valid, we know that it must be one of those solutions. The only thing that we need to show is that it needs to be the greatest one. Well, I didn't even need to write this, is valid. We know that it has to be one of those solutions. We only don't know if this is the greatest. So, in order to show this, we need to establish that all we need is for any x which is a solution to this equation, and for any s in this, for any states which is in such a state, we need to show that m s forces a g phi. So yeah, I was writing this horrible phi, which is looking like empty set. Right? That would show that any x this would mean that any solution x is contained in the notation of AG phi, and this means that the notation of AG phi has to be greatest of those x's, right? In fact, I'm now disappointed at myself that I picked AG rather than EG. EG would have been easier. Sorry, but well, what can you do? Yeah, EG would have been really much more pleasant to show. Maybe I can. Is it okay if I change it now to EG? Or is it not legal to change the rules of the game? So sorry. I mean, I leave you to modify, to adjust this proof to AG as an exercise. And I'm abusing my privileges of lecturer to choose easier thing to do. So what we need to show, what we need to demonstrate now? Well, what we need to find is an infinite path starting from S such that phi holds everywhere. So, because we already know that S belongs to our X, and X is a solution to that equation, oh God, of course I need to change more if I want to work with AX. This means in particular that S itself makes phi true. And because S belongs here as well, S belongs to X and X is intersection of these two guys, S has a successor in X. Again. And this successor again must satisfy phi and have a successor in X. The successor of the successor, because it belongs to X, has to satisfy phi again and have a successor which belongs to X. We can build inductively a sequence of elements S equal to S0, which is related to S1, S2. Which belong to X, which is contained in the notation of phi. Oh, again, I'm switching. What I built, I have just produced an infinite path where phi holds everywhere. And this is precisely the satisfaction clause for EG. Where phi holds and this is exactly what I needed to show. Any x which is a solution, not necessarily maximal to this equation, is contained in the notation of EG, therefore EG is the greatest fixed. So weiter alles klar, oder? And especially is my handwriting clear, if I push things. And well, okay, now we are getting closer to actual model checking. So we could formulate CTL using just E, X, U, and AF as model primitives. And all of these formulas, none of them includes G for all points on the path, are computable using least fixed points. So this procedure starting from the notation of phi and adding points. And in order to keep life even simpler, we can assume that all formulas in CTL are written just using conjunction and negation and bottom. So now the way we are going to compute the denotation of our phi is by passing through the model and labeling states with more and more complex subformulas of our phi. As for bottom, well, nothing is labeled with bottom. False is not true enough. If you have already passed through the model, or during your pass through the model, you already labeled a given state with both psi 1 and psi 2, where both psi 1 and psi 2 are subformulas or phi, then of course you can label your state with psi 1 and psi 2. If you have already computed the extension of subformula psi, then you can label all points which are not in that extension with not psi. This is clear. If you have already extension of all points where psi holds, then you label all points which have at least, now you have to start scanning predecessor. So you have to travel across the transition structure. You label all points which have at least one successor labeled with psi with EX psi. For the algorithm for labeling clause for AF is obtained from our equality here. If a state is already labeled with psi, you can also label it with AF psi. Then you can label those states whose all successors are labeled with AF psi, again with AF psi. This is the second step or second iteration. And then you keep adding states whose all successors were labeled in the exactly those states who already know that all their successors are in psi, AF of psi, until no more states are labeled. Similarly, for there exists a path such that psi 1 holds until psi 2. If you have, because of this equality, you know that if you have already state labeled with psi 2, you labeled it with the entire formula. So this is this part. This is when you move from bottom or empty set to F of empty set. Now we are already here in this part. You labeled all, you labeled with our desired formula those states which where psi 1 holds, and which moreover have at least one successor which are already labeled with our output formula. And you keep repeating this until no more states can be labeled. This is doable computationally, it's just slightly suboptimal. So while we don't know, because I don't want to assume that everybody has some background complexity, who has actually, who knows this big O notation? Ah, okay, this is in BFS. Okay. Then this is, then I should have prepared more on this. But even straightforward analysis of this algorithm, I thought that it was only in Compaq, which is not there anymore. But of course, it's not possible. It must be in other courses as well, yes. So the number of passes that you do through the model, they are, by this thing, maybe this is not very good notation, I mean here the number of connectives that you have in the formula, because you repeat this algorithm as many times, or a number of subformulas that this formula has, times the number of states, because for every state you need to check whether you label it with a given subformula or not, times the number of states in your state structure, and the cardinality of the transition relation, so the number of pairs that you have in. So you get something that is linear in the size of input formula, in the number of subformulas or connectives that this formula has, but quadratic in the size of the model. Not bad, but we can do better. CTL is not happy with such suboptimal quadratic bound in the size of the model. So the first thing that we want to do in order to make sure that you are not wasting empty passes through the model is that you're doing in a streamlined way. For example, let's stick to backwards breadth first search to avoid visiting the same node. And then the more important or more interesting transformation is that instead of computing AF on every path it holds somewhere in future, you compute our EG. So it's actually not so bad that we did this example for EG. Oh God. This is what happens when you change the rules of the game during the game. So this was, well, we even know precisely what it was. We just developed this example in detail. And I told you that when computing greatest fixed point and least fixed point, rather than adding points, making more and more points labeled, you need to throw points away, keep throwing them until things stabilize. And again, this is psi, it should be phi, I will correct it. So you start with the notation of psi, and then you keep deleting fixed points. What you are interested in is finding the maximal strongly connected components among those satisfying psi. And funnily enough, here you have properly psi again. So a strongly connected, maybe let's write a definition on the blackboard. strongly connected component in our transition, labeled transition structure, is a subset X of S such that for every S1, S2 in X, there is a path from S1 to S2. And maximal, well, means what it means, that adding any more points will break down this property. Why? Why do we want to look at those things? What would strongly connected component, which is a subset of the denotation of psi, correspond to? Remember that the notations of that our formulas talk about paths in the model. So something with this property would be like exactly the infinite loop of points where psi holds everywhere. A path where psi holds, so these are suffixes of paths where psi hold, where psi holds. I said these are suffixes, so it might be that you have, for example, a situation like this. So here you have just one pure path where phi does not hold everywhere. This is a maximal, strongly connected component where phi holds. This is not the denotation of EG, right? It is too small. In order to, I said suffixes, so in order to finish our computation of EG, we need to find again, perhaps, or preferably, but by something again like backwards breadth first search, all points from which, and remember that this was already deleted, right? So in the first step, we'd already deleted all points where phi, or rather psi, sorry, let's be consistent with what we have on the slides, where psi did not hold. So now, if you have a point where in this submodel restricted to where psi holds, from which such strongly connected component is reachable, it means that EG psi holds also here and it holds also here. Is it clear? And now you get something whose complexity is the number of subformulas, or equivalently, connectives in psi, again, sorry, this is horrible, times the number of states plus the number of transitions. This is why we were sticking to this backwards breadth as such. So now we obtain something that is linear both in the size of the input formula and in the size of input model. This is quite good. Okay. So as far as CTL itself is concerned, that's all that we need. We have model checking algorithm which has clear mathematical justification and which is as good computationally as possible, and it wouldn't probably even be very hard to program as soon as you know how to describe these inputs. But we are not happy yet, because as you already know, after working 2 or 3 weeks with new SMV or new XMV, all these properties that you want to ensure, liveness and especially fairness, you probably already use this keyword in your new SMV or new XMV exercises. And it's a bit dodgy what to do with it in CTL. So we can think of, in fact, several fairness notions that would be meaningful. Maybe let me put the whole slide on with maybe one, the last one or the last but one that we're going to do today. So the simplest fairness, I'm not sure which one of those, Christoph, occurred already in concrete examples that you did in the tutorials. This is the simplest one, right? Maybe you can forget maybe even about these conjuncts for the time being. This is just a way to give ourselves more freedom. This kind of fairness constraints that psi occurs everywhere. Sorry, not everywhere. This is not the psi occurs infinitely often on our path. This is something that you for sure needed, right? Maybe even if you work with LTL, sometimes you want to make your life simpler, and rather than writing long LTL formula, use the fairness keyword, even though it's really not necessary from purely mathematical point of view, but maybe from computational or convenience point of view, it actually makes sense using even with LTL. And in CTL, you simply need it. The strong fairness condition like this is, if phi occurs infinitely often on your path, then psi must also occur infinitely often on your path. Maybe not on the same point. Maybe not in the same points, right? So it might be that phi keeps appearing in odd points and psi keeps appearing at even points. There is nothing here about overlap between those guys. And there is also another possible notion with weak fairness condition. So conjunction of formulas of this form. What does this mean? If your path has a suffix, so if you cut it off after finitely many points, you will be able to find such a suffix where phi holds everywhere, then it also must be the case that psi keeps appearing everywhere, keeps appearing maybe not everywhere, but infinitely often on our path in general, and in particular in that suffix. Christoph, were there any examples of strong fairness conditions or weak fairness conditions, or just this unconditional fairness in in a theoretical example, okay. So notice, of course, and we could generalize this further, so I already allowed conjunction of guys of this form in the weak, in the strong fairness, and the weak fairness, in the unconditional fairness. We could generalize it still further and say that a fairness condition, in the most abstract possible way, is just arbitrary conjunction of formulas of all these three forms. As many of them as you want, and as many of them as you need. Notice, of course, these are not legal CTL formulas. This combination is LTL-ish, but not CTL-ish. So here you write CTL formulas on, but you prefix them with things which live in LTL, if at all. This is a bit awkward, and things are going to get even more messy. I think that I should not pursue it any further, especially that video recording stuff also has its working hours. So, right. On the next slide, I will repeat this slide anyway at the beginning of this lecture. I was just recalling what those clauses would mean. And then we are not even done yet with the syntax of the CTL with fairness condition. And then we need to check if our model checking algorithms that I described today can be somehow adjusted to this new setting. So this is where we start very belatedly next week. Any questions? Well, if not, then peace next, and enjoy the exercise.
Last thing.